Please silence all electronic devices.
There's something to be said, an important thing to be said in politics for passion, for people who really care about someone. I mean, Trump has shown that. Trump has a passionate base.
I think the way that that settlement came about, I think there were just too many questions, lack of transparency. You're using taxpayer money for this.
Wow, it's a kumbaya week for us, huh?
Any further discussion or debate?
From the Fourth Estate Bunker of Truth in downtown Raleigh at your General Assembly, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Now less than 3 weeks until Super Tuesday rolls through North Carolina, and we will check in on the notable primary as we review the week in state politics. Here for the conversation, as usual, Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. Hello.
Hey.
Hi, guys.
A Superior Court judge reversed a settlement this week between the Sons of Confederate Veterans and the UNC system. Gone is a $2.5 million settlement, and uncertain is where the mangled symbol of the Jim Crow South, known as Silent Sam, goes next. Becky, was the reversal the right decision this week? And if you want to put your creative hat on, what ought they do with the Confederate monument?
Well, that's sort of the $2 million question at this point. You know, what do you do with this? I mean, we've gone back and forth and back and forth and back and forth with this, tried different things. You know, was the reversal the right thing to do? I think the way that that settlement came about, I think there were just too many questions, lack of transparency. You're using taxpayer money for this. And we're not sure who owns Silent Sam, but a monument that has been on public property for, 100 years. So I think that the lack of transparency with the settlement, in my view, really warranted a second look at it. And, of course, this is not over. There's a hearing, I think, on February 17th, just, in a couple days, for the parties to file affidavits and to continue this conversation about what to do. So where Silent Sam is going to find his final resting place is still very much up in the air.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Becky said. I mean, it was a scam. The whole agreement was negotiated in secret. They sprung it on people right before Thanksgiving. It was something that was entirely predictable that Judge Badur would nix the whole plan once all the facts had truly come out and we understood. And the fact, frankly, that the courtroom was flooded with people who were not happy about the agreement. There was the whole UNC Chapel Hill community was speaking out very strongly.
And the timing of the settlement and the court filing that was filed.
Right.
I mean, that was kind of part of it, too.
Right. It was all
all been worked out ahead of time.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. It wasn't even a real lawsuit. And what, of course, the judge found is that the Sons of Confederate Veterans didn't really even have standing to bring the lawsuit because they really don't have any ownership right in the statue. And so, yeah, what do we do now? I thought Mel Watt, I liked what he had to say. He said we should just melt the darn thing down and take the money we get from it and spend it on scholarships, or at least that's what he said he'd do if it were up to him. But obviously it's not going back on campus, notwithstanding maybe some of folks on the far right of the board, Tom Fetzer, Tom Goolsbee, want to reinstall the darn thing. It's not going back. Seems like we need to just send it off to a battlefield somewhere or just let it molder away in a warehouse is probably what needs to happen.
An appeal is available to the Sons of the Confederacy if they want to appeal this. Of course, litigation costs money. And kudos to the Daily Tar Heel and some of the reporters there who have done a very fine job on this this story in the recent weeks and months. They have reported this week that the Sons of the Confederacy are very much strapped for cash. All right, let's move on. State Superintendent Mark Johnson made his latest dubious decision this week when he sent out some 800,000 emails and 540,000 text messages to parents and educators across the state. He was voicing his opposition to Common Core and also asked parents to take an online survey. As a reminder, Johnson, a Republican, is not seeking re-election for the superintendent post, but rather sits in a crowded primary for lieutenant governor. Another reminder, there is a state law that prohibits elected officials from using their elected post for campaign purposes. Multiple ethics complaints were filed against Johnson on Thursday. Did Johnson violate state law? And if so, what's an appropriate punishment?
Well, I think that's kind of up in the air whether he violated state law. But, Jeff, often there's a difference between violating state law and doing what the right thing is. I think the fact that DPI and education officials in North Carolina have contact information for parents and teachers. So I think that database that they've compiled with that information is appropriate, because there's all kinds of information that in emergency situations or for a variety of reasons, DPI may need to get information to parents.
The database itself is appropriate, the existence of
it. I think so. Sure. Yes, because in circumstances, I think this is clearly a question of appropriate use for that. I think that the position on Common Core is one that's been a question that we've had since Common Core was put into place. I mean, we've been talking about this for years. There's no immediacy to this. So the fact that the superintendent of public instruction would contact parents and educators through this database of information that they have provided with personal cell phone numbers and those kind of things, I think is appropriate. I think in this case, I don't see where the immediacy or the real need for it was.
Sorry, let me follow up, because I'm not totally hearing you clearly. You think it was appropriate that he did this?
No.
No.
No, to use it in that way.
Was
I
inappropriate
think that,
as
right,
we're less
yes.
than 3 weeks before Super Tuesday, the day
right.
early or
and there
the
are,
week
there,
early.
Yeah, there are state laws in place that say an elected official cannot use their position for campaign reasons, and that was put into place years ago when we saw that being abused. And I think that, you know, there's a difference between running for office and governing, and I think that that needs to be a clear line. And in this case, I didn't see that that the governing part of the superintendent of public instruction warranted the kind of information that he was sending out.
Clarified. Thank you.
Wow, it's a kumbaya week for us, huh? We're agreeing on stuff. I mean, obviously, I agree. I think Mark Johnson, you know, he was an accidental electee almost to this office. He's sort of been in over his head from the beginning. He's never really mastered the job or shown much interest in sticking with it. He's already running for something else. I believe I heard on WRAL's reporting this week that there had been some vetting of this message with some of his campaign staff. I stand to be corrected there if I'm wrong.
WRAL did, in fact, report that.
Yes. So, I mean, it's pretty clear that he has stepped over the line. That's why there's something like a dozen complaints been filed. As to what the punishment should be, that's a very good question. You know, we don't have much of a record in the state of ethics officials taking strong action against politicians who violate the law. You know, I imagine by the time they get around to taking action on it, Johnson may already be out of a job. But the other point that should be mentioned, I suppose, is that I think maybe there are some agreement on right and left about Common Core being a flawed thing. And it is something we should be taking some time to look at very carefully. But obviously, this wasn't the way to go about communicating with parents. It's a database that should be preciously guarded and not used for political purposes.
You look like you have an idea for punishment.
I do have an idea for punishment.
Yes.
Well,
write
no, for punishment, I mean, I will disagree with Rob that I don't think this was an accidental election for Mark Johnson. I mean, it was a legitimate election. He was voted in by the people. I mean, he won that election. The question now is he is going to be running for lieutenant governor. And, you know, we have another election. And anytime there's an incumbent or someone who has held public office, they have a record that they are accountable for. So whether there's a punishment and whether there's an action, I think that this will all play into the election for lieutenant governor and what that looks like for Mark Johnson. And I'm pretty sure this will come up again if he prevails in the primary, and will probably affect some folks' decision on who they vote for lieutenant governor. So I think actions have consequences.
Agree there.
There are 15 candidates for lieutenant governor when you combine the Republicans and the Democrats. So if any race seems primed for a possible second primary later this spring, certainly keep an eye on that lieutenant governor's race. Now just 18 days until Super Tuesday. Early voting started yesterday. A new poll out this week shows Michael Bloomberg continuing to rise in North Carolina. And it was not a good week for Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren. Poor showings in New Hampshire, the nation's first primary. And it's unclear if the vice president is primed for a good performance here in North Carolina. As we head down the final stretch with the election polls already open, what factors are you looking at as potentially able to shift the outcome here as we think about the Democratic presidential primary or other races, if there's a particular race you're looking at? What factors could have an outsized impact in these final 2.5 weeks, Rob?
There's no doubt that momentum plays a big role in primary elections, presidential primaries. And we've got other votes coming, I believe, right? South Carolina, Nevada, aren't they coming before we vote? And they'll be the results there. If Biden does well in South Carolina and resurrects his campaign, then that probably bodes well for him in North Carolina. If he has another struggle there, it's a very fluid situation. Bloomberg, You know, one thing you'll say about Michael Bloomberg, the guy's not going to get out analytic. I mean, he's got obviously the staff to assess the numbers, to decipher what needs to be done to get his campaign where he wants it to be, and he's spending the money to make it happen. And he had a, you know, he's, that probably plays a big role in the rise that we're seeing of his numbers in North Carolina and around the country.
Well, I think it really comes down to the three B's in the Democratic primary: Bernie, Bloomberg, and Biden is what we're going to be looking at. And I think there's real repercussions here in North Carolina. If Bernie Sanders is the nominee, how does that affect other races in a very purple state that we have here in North Carolina? And there's already been some predictions of what that would do for Governor Cooper's race. And some other things with Bloomberg. The thing that I just think is fascinating is the way that he's approaching this. I think it's kind of a new threshold of how you do an election. And, of course, self-funded, so it's kind of like there is no limit to the amount of money that can be spent. So I'm sure that political scientists and political consultants and people who do that kind of thing are watching this with tremendous interest of what does this new model look like. And then, you know, of course, you know, there's also kind of a history lesson here, I think, within the Democratic Party. You know, where does Vice President Biden fit into this? Do they go back to kind of the tried and true with Biden and what his approach is, or do they go with Bloomberg, or do they kind of go way to the left with Bernie? So I think it's going to be really interesting to watch nationally, but then right here in North Carolina, what is going to happen? What is the direction that it's going to take? Mm-hmm. And for us, for the three of us that talk about this every week, what does that mean for North Carolina races?
You mentioned the three B's. Didn't mention former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who finished
another
second
B.
in New Hampshire.
Well, another B. Yeah,
and
right.
I'm unsure of how to loop her in with a B, but rising perhaps more
name.
Than anybody, perhaps the biggest boost going, I'm being cheesy now, but Amy Klobuchar has
right.
had a
right.
fantastic couple of weeks. But you didn't mention either of them. What are you taking away from them, if anything?
Well, I think it's wide open. And again, I think each of those candidates brings something different to the table. And what that looks like, and of course, Pete Buttigieg and Amy are
it's
both younger. Yeah. You know, they're younger, so, you know, would these be vice presidential candidates? You know, is something else to look for.
Here's the thing about Bernie Sanders, though. There's this perception, oh, he's way out on the left, he's got no chance.
He's a socialist.
People said the exact same
he's
stuff
a Democratic
about
socialist.
People said the exact same thing about Barack Obama, that he was going to be alienating people in 2008. And in fact, there's something to be said, an important thing to be said in politics for passion, for people who really care about someone. I mean, Trump has shown that. Trump has a passionate base. Sanders, say what you will, has a very passionate base. He is very consistent. He articulates a very coherent message that, frankly, I think still, on the lion's share of what he says, he's not actually that different from what Joe Biden or Amy Klobuchar or Pete Buttigieg says. And that's a formidable – I still think he's actually the front runner, both potentially even in North Carolina, but certainly on a national basis going forward.
Now, the polls don't indicate that. The polls don't indicate that Bernie's the front runner in North Carolina at this point, do they?
I think you're right. I think – but he's definitely – I mean, as we've said, it's a very fluid situation.
It is.
And he's
true.
Clearly moving up. He's clearly in – I think he's got a larger base of passionate supporters, partially just because he's been running longer. People know him. They know his name. They worked for him in 2016. Those are things that Buttigieg and Klobuchar can't bring to the table.
Well, there are a lot of Republicans, a lot of conservatives who hope Rob is right and would love for Bernie to be at the top of the ticket.
We'll just see.
4 years ago, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton in the North Carolina primary. Clinton won that election, just as a reminder for some context, by a 54-40% margin. Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekends.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
The WUNC Politics Podcast drops twice a week. You can get a review of some of the things that happened in North Carolina political circles on Fridays, and you can also hear part of that conversation during All Things Considered on the radio. Earlier in the week, we have conversations with lawmakers, journalists, political scientists, and other observers of this dynamic North Carolina political world that we exist in. As a quick and hopefully painless solicitation, I do want to remind you that we are in a pledge drive right now. If you're unfamiliar with how public radio works, it is a little bit different. Several times a year, we turn to you, our loyal listening audience, and ask for money. If that sounds tacky, Please understand, this is actually how public radio works. Tens of thousands of people pledge the station each year. They make contributions of $5, $10, $50 a month. And what that helps to do is pay the bills and ensure that good, hopefully good, programs and podcasts, context and analysis reach your ears on a regular basis. So if you've already pledged North Carolina Public Radio, I just wanted to say thanks because it means a lot. And a little known fact is that the listener contributions actually make up more than half of our budget. More than half of the revenue that comes in comes from listeners just like you. So if you are a donor, thank you. If you're not in a position to give, that's okay. Hope you'll still listen to the podcast. But if you are in a position to maybe make a sustaining pledge or a one-time gift, you can do it at our website, which is WUNC.org, or you can do it over the phone. 800-962-9862 is the phone number, 800-962-9862. So a big thank you for listening and for considering that pledge. We'll be back next week. I have a scheduled conversation on Monday with the formerly referred to 51st Senator of North Carolina. GOP strategist Jim Blaine is going to offer some Super Tuesday and 2020 insights, and the plan is to have that podcast to you on Tuesday of next week. In the meantime, for Becky and Rob, my name is Jeff. We'll talk to you again soon.